But now came the real difficulty of the enquiry. The order of the English letters after E is by no means well marked, and any preponderance which may be shown in an average of a printed sheet may be reversed in a single short sentence. Speaking roughly, T-A-O-I-N-S-H-R-D-L are the numerical order in which letters occur, but T-A-O and I are very nearly abreast of each other, and it would be an endless task to try each combination until a meaning was arrived at. I, therefore, waited for fresh material. In my second interview with Mr. Hilton Cubitt, he was able to give me two other short sentences and one message, which appeared, since there was no flag, to be a single word. Here are the symbols. Now, in the single word, I have already got the two E's coming second and fourth in a word of five letters. It might be sever, or lever, or never. There can be no question that the latter, as a reply to an appeal, is far the most probable, and the circumstances pointed to its being a reply written by the lady. Accepting it as correct, we are now able to say that the symbols thus, thus, and so stand respectively for N, V, and R. Even now I was in considerable difficulty, but a happy thought put me in possession of several other letters. It occurred to me that if these appeals came, as I expected, from someone who had been intimate with the lady in her early life, a combination which contained two E's with three letters might very well stand for the name Elsie. On examination, I found that such a combination formed the termination of the message which was three times repeated. It was certainly some appeal to Elsie. In this way, I had got my L, S, and I. But what appeal could it be? There were only four letters in the word which preceded Elsie, and it ended in E. Surely the word must be come. I tried all other four letters ending in E, but could find none to fit the case. So now I was in possession of C-O-M, and I was in a position to attack the first message once more, dividing it into words, and putting dots for each symbol which was still unknown. So treated, it worked out in this fashion. Dot M, dot E-R-E, dot dot E, S-L dot N-E. Now, the first letter can only be A, which is a most useful discovery, since it occurs no fewer than three times in this short sentence, and the H is also apparent in the second word. Now it becomes M here, A dot E, slain dot, or, filling in the obvious vacancies in the name, M here, Abe Slaney. I had so many letters now that I could proceed with considerable confidence to the second message, which worked out in this fashion. A dot, E-L-R-I dot E-S dot. Here I could only make sense by putting T and G for the missing letters, and supposing that the name was that of some house or inn at which the writer was staying. Inspector Martin and I had listened with the utmost interest to the full and clear account of how my friend had produced results which had led to so complete a command over our difficulties. "What did you do then, sir?" asked the inspector. I had every reason to suppose that this Abe Slaney was an American, since Abe is an American contraction, and since a letter from America had been the starting point of all the trouble. I had also every cause to think that there was some criminal secret in the matter. The lady's allusions to her past and her refusal to take her husband into her confidence both pointed in that direction. I therefore cabled to my friend, Wilson Hargreave of the New York Police Bureau, who has more than once made use of my knowledge of London crime. I asked him whether the name of Abe Slaney was known to him. Here is his reply: "The most dangerous crook in Chicago." On the very evening upon which I had his answer, Hilton Cubitt sent me the last message from Slaney. Working with known letters, it took this form.